At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Tommy, you just got back from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. What were you doing up there?
Yeah, so I was driving the new Ford Bronco Everglades, not in the Everglades, clearly. And I am very, 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 very bad at my Michigan terminology because I walked into an ice cream shop and I ordered an Up Mackinac, which was the flavor of the ice cream, and it was actually UP Mackinac. So I got both words wrong of the ice cream flavor.
Don't they call those people up there Youpers?
Youpers.
Yeah, is that right?
That sounds right. I'm not the guy to ask, clearly.
I don't know either. Anyway, we're going to be talking about the new Everglades Bronco. We're also going to be talking about the Bronco Raptor, since we've had it here at the office. And, of course, we drag raced it against the V8-powered Jeep Wrangler 392. So all that is coming up, plus whatever news we can get to next on the TFL Talk podcast. Matt, roll the music, please, and let's get going. Welcome to TFL Talk, the official podcast of TFL Studios, where we talk about the best, and yes, even sometimes the worst new cars. We talk about the coolest and sometimes the least uncool old cars. And of course, we give you an insider's view of all things automotive. And hopefully we do it having fun and sometimes arguing. So if you're driving, keep driving. And if you're not, why not?
So for those wondering, Matt is our editor. That's why he said Matt cue the music. Thank you, Matt, for really coming in clutch today and doing a great job on the podcast, as always.
So, Tommy, before we get to your adventures in the Upper Peninsula, why don't you define what an Everglades Bronco is, please?
Well, the Everglades Bronco is kind of like the overlandy off-roader enthusiast Bronco. So it is not quite the Raptor, right? But it certainly is more special than a standard Bronco. So there's a model called the Black Diamond, which is already like the off-roady choice. And then what they do is they add these super cool wheels on it, a functional snorkel. It's got a functional winch right from the factory. They actually change the breather tubes on like the diffs and stuff. So it's got deeper fording depth. And they give it a cool roof rack. So this is kind of like the enthusiast dream Bronco.
And for those of you guys who are listening to this, Tommy is pointing to the screen, which you can't see. But we did publish a video this weekend over at TFL Now. The easiest way to find it is alltfl.com, where you do a walk around of the Everglades. So if you want to see what it looks like, head on over to alltfl.com and you can check out the latest, greatest, and newest Bronco. And Tommy, let me ask you this. Why are you wearing waders?
We did some crazy, 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 crazy mudding in the northern part of Michigan, which I have not done a whole lot of, but it was a really amazing experience. And they gave us these waders because there were times where, like, especially for me running around like headless chicken filming, I would be up like three feet in water. And these waders were incredible. Have you ever worn waders?
Yes, I actually went hunting.
Did you know the wader, the pant, waders. The pant
duck
part,
hunting.
The pant part is connected to the boot?
Yes, I knew that.
I thought that they were separate for some reason. So that was a big surprise. But what a magnificent invention the waiter is. I'm going to wear them everywhere. I was going to wear them through TSA, I decided not to.
Well, let me ask you this. Did they help you find the drone that you stuck into the mud?
They were very, yes, they felt very bad about that. I was riding shotgun with my drive buddy, Kristen, and we were going through basically a swamp. I mean, there's one section where there's like 500 feet of water and mud.
So it is like the Everglades.
Yeah, it is.
But the northern version of it.
So we, the northern, more friendly version. So we dive in
there. No alligators.
We dive into this swamp, and I'm flying the drone. It's going really well. I'm like, wow, look at this amazing shot. And then I look out the window to make sure my GoPro's still on, because I'm like, it would really suck if I lost the camera in the swamp.
Yeah.
And then I look back up, and in that split instant, I look down. The drone was gone. So then I look down at the little screen with where the phone is, and it's a drone gets disconnected.
Was it one of those submergible drones?
It was absolutely not a submergible drone. Yeah, right.
So you plopped the drone into the muddy water, and it disappeared from view, and you had no clue where it went?
Yeah, it's gone forever. I do have the footage off of it. Luckily, it was saved to my phone. A little bit low res. It wasn't like the nice 4K shots.
Right.
and we also did like 9 hours of driving, so I was pretty fried by the end of the day.
Dude, I'm okay with that. Don't worry. It's kind of the cost of doing business.
Oh, I felt terrible.
I like the snorkel on this thing, because I did see it at the Chicago Auto Show. And, you know, most snorkels look like they're just kind of stuck on the side, right? Which they are. Let's face it. We've done snorkels on our off-roaders, and what ends up happening is you buy a snorkel, and then you cut a hole in the hood, which is a little terrifying. And then you got this, like, really awkward-looking thing that kind of – I'm doing like a little – snake thing with my hand right now that sticks out on the side of the passenger window, and either you face the air intake forward or backward, but inevitably what you end up getting is a lot of noise from the wind as it whooshes by the snorkel, and it makes the passenger, if it's on the passenger side, very unhappy and grumpy, or the driver if it's on the driver's side. So does this snorkel actually make a lot of wind noise?
I have no idea.
Didn't you drive it?
Yeah, like 9 miles an hour the whole day.
No, didn't you drive it like on the road?
Yeah, like 35. I don't know. I mean, I think we hit maybe 50 miles an hour once.
Yeah, so did it make any noise?
I don't think so.
You would have noticed it. It's pretty noticeable.
Well, like our Land Cruiser didn't make noise until you were going like 70.
Well, and we had a vibration and it started hitting up against the side of the A-pillar.
What this does, which is very cool, is so it's a factory-installed snorkel, right? And it is a special fender, actually, on the Everglades. This is the best-looking fender, by the way. Because every other Bronco has this kind of perfect half moon. This is kind of squared off and rugged, and it's even better than the Raptor, I think. But yeah, the snorkel's very cool. And what I love about what Ford did with the snorkel is they didn't call it a desert air intake.
They called it a real snorkel.
So remember Toyota did this thing a while ago where they put one on a TRD Pro Tacoma, and like all the lawyers were like, no, you can't call it a snorkel.
Yeah, because if you submerge the truck beyond its fording weight, you're not going to help yourself with a snorkel, because it's really not a true sealed air intake where it takes all of its air from the snorkel. So water could potentially get into the Toyota. So the lawyers were like, no, don't call it a snorkel, because that'll make people take it into deep water. So Ford has somehow gotten around that. Why are you giving me that look? That's exactly what I'm saying is exactly true.
What's interesting about the snorkel thing is...
No, that's not... What do you mean? That's true.
No, it isn't true.
It
because
is true.
The issue with the other snorkels on the market... First of all, snorkels are a little silly, because... On modern-day vehicles, you will fry the electronics, you will flood the diffs and the transmission with water before you get...
What's the fording weight?
I'm getting there.
What's the fording height? Sorry.
One sec. So you would flood the entire electrical system well before you get to a lot of modern-day air intakes, even if they're under the hood. What the snorkel offers, if you do get a little bit of water over the hood, you are going to have that clean, fresh air up top. But the big difference here is Ford actually moved the little vent breather tubes up 87 millimeters in the front and 55 millimeters in the rear, which means in total you get 3 extra inches over any other Bronco of waiting depth.
Wait, what breather tubes?
Oh, this is very important. I mean, differentials have to have little breather
tubes. Oh, so the differential breathing
tubes. And I think even the trans... I don't know... I'm not sure. I gotta check my notes again.
So tell you're looking at me like I'm an idiot, and I always hate that. So we're
I'm not
get,
looking at
yeah,
you.
Yeah, like, you're like, oh no, you're an idiot, Dad.
No, I'm just
first
saying,
of all, if you're gonna say this, say it in inches, not millimeters, because this is an American podcast. I have no clue. You know, you just said millimeters. What does that mean?
Well, I told you it's about 3 inches.
So 3 inches
more wading depth than any other Bronco. Ooh. Why did you get all offended?
Because you looked at me like
I did not.
You gave me this look like you're an idiot, Dad.
It's just my face. I didn't give you a look.
You did. You gave
I
me
did
that
not.
Look. That looked like you're just so stupid. You don't know that there's breathing. Tubes in the transmission.
No.
So I'm going to, you know, show you. Yes, you
first
did.
Of all, I might be the idiot there. I don't think there's a breather tube in the transmission. I think it's for the diffs. Someone will let me know in the comment section, but I wrote it down in my notes. But it's got extended breather tubes.
I think what I said is valid, Tommy.
No, the Toyota thing is more than that, because I think the Toyota is not limited by the air intake position. It's limited by, like, the fuse box and everything else. They also, by the way, when they did the snorkel, they had to move a whole lot of other stuff in the engine bay. But, I mean,
So, okay, if you're so smart...
I'm not... don't make me feel bad.
Where does the air come in outside of the snorkel then, to the engine?
I'm already a nerdy kid. Don't make me feel bad.
You're the one making me feel bad.
I'm not making you feel bad. I just didn't give you a look. It's just my face.
I said, hey, so is that true? And you said, no. like I was some kind of...
I did not.
Like,
I just said...
Like a teacher slapping a four-year-old down.
I said...
Who asked if he can go to the bathroom.
Well, I'm sorry if I made you feel bad. It was not my intention. I just said, I don't think so. Because Toyota is, of course, going to be limited by their very, very, very conservative, let's be honest, lawyers. Right? And of course, Ford has lawyers, too.
I don't know if it's lawyers. Maybe engineers. We can't
it
say that.
It could be engineers. But I don't think Toyota moved the breather tubes on their Tacomas.
How much in not metric? How much fording depth does the
36.4 inches?
36.4 inches, so 3 feet.
3 feet,
like that much.
Well, you need to remeasure your 3 feet.
That's 3 feet.
That is.
So you're rolling on 35. So 3 feet is what? About halfway up, maybe 2/3 of the way up the wheel. Is that how high? Would that be fair?
No, it is not fair. No, 30. So 35-inch tall tire, 36.4-inch fording depth.
Okay.
So it would be like halfway up the door.
Okay, well, that's impressive.
It's basically a fording depth.
And did you go into water that deep?
We did do some really deep mudding, yeah. So that video is going to be up live on Tuesday over at TFL Off-Road.
And did water come into the cabin?
I can't tell you that.
Why not?
You have to watch the video.
Oh, no, just tell us.
No, you have to watch the video.
Oh, we just did a whole podcast on the truck channel where I completely talked about what happened when you guys went towing with the Lightning. That's coming up on truck, by the way, and how little range it had. And I've changed our editorial policy.
Right.
So we're not going to be teasing. When I listen to podcasts and I hear them tease stuff.
I hate it, too. I really hate it, but I can't. I contractually can't tell
you. Oh, because of the embargo?
Yeah.
Is that a driving impression?
I think it's a driving impression.
All right, so that's fair.
Right.
So I hate, like, I listen to Behind the Glass, and they're always, like, teasing stuff. Oh, God, when he bought a new car, that was literally a half hour of teasing what it is, and I hate that. It just makes me grumpy, so I don't want to do that on this podcast. But if Ford obviously has a – and when is the embargo? On Tuesday?
Uh-huh.
So this publishes on Monday, so we can't actually say.
Right.
Fair enough. All right.
Why are you getting down on me here?
I'm just doing my thing.
I'm not trying to make anyone feel bad.
I'm just saying fair enough.
It's got the snorkel. Now, that Warren winch in the front is an interesting story. So it sticks out well beyond the bumper, and they actually had to recertify the crash test worthiness of the Everglades.
That's expensive.
Yeah, very expensive versus any other Bronco.
Wow, and is that waterproof?
It's a Warren Zeon 10S.
Okay.
And what they did basically is modify it from one that you can buy off of the showroom floor. So 10 means it's a 10,000-pound winch. S means that it's synthetic. And then what they did to modify it is they actually redid the coating on the winch, like the powder coating, to meet Ford standards. They changed the fairlead and the winch and the hook design once again just to make sure that it would be completely corrosion-free for Ford standards. And then they also changed some of the mounting hardware. But it is a cool thing to have. So this Bronco goes down the assembly line with other Broncos, and then it leaves the assembly line and goes to something called the Mod Center, which is kind of similar to what a Raptor does as well, where some of these things are added.
Cool. Anything else unique about it? I see that you've got kind of a cool color there. Is that a unique Everglades color?
It sure is, yeah. Yeah, that right there is the hearing aid beige,
mm-hmm.
Which is, of course, the hottest color in the off-road world. It's this flat kind of tan color.
It is the hottest color. Our ZR2 is that same color.
Someone on the trip called it prosthetic arm beige. But no, I do love the color. It's a fantastic color. It's actually called Desert Sand, and I love it. I really like it. Now, currently, it's exclusive to Everglades. But that may change going forward. And another thing about the Everglades, too, is it's got that roof rack up top, which I think has over 400 pounds of static load, so you can put a rooftop tent up there. This vehicle is kind of a one-stop shop for someone that wants a kitted-out Bronco to go do cool stuff
in. Has Ford released pricing yet?
$53,000.
So our Sasquatch first edition was $63,000, so you're $10,000 less.
Right.
And the Bronco Raptor that we had here with the bells and whistles was 81, so mm-hmm. you're significantly less.
But you can only get the four-cylinder in the Everglades.
Wonder why that is. Did you ask?
I did ask. Yep. First of all, the four-cylinder is right around 100 pounds lighter than the V6.
So it floats easier?
Well, that coincidentally is the same weight as the winch on the front.
Okay.
So you do sacrifice some of the power for the added weight of the winch.
I see.
And then fuel economy.
All right.
CAFE standards is a big deal. But it's got, basically it's a Sasquatch Bronco. So it's got lockers. It's got the same tires as our Bronco, the 35s.
Any difference in the interior?
Well, it's got full marine grade vinyl everywhere. So it's got vinyl seats. It's got complete vinyl floors. It's got the big screen. There's not a whole lot of options on it. And then it's got some sticker packages like the Everglades. And it will only be available to the current Bronco reservation holders right now, actually. So they're only opening it up to folks that currently have a Bronco on order.
Well, that's great if you have one on order, but it sucks if you don't, huh?
There's a lot of folks that have Broncos on order, though. So that was kind of the thinking. They're
okay.
Like,
okay, so
we're going to make this kind of a thank
enthusiast?
You. Yeah, the thank you for waiting so long. If you want, you can buy this model.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's clever.
Do you like the wheels?
I do like the wheels. Are those unique as well? They're kind of pie... pie tin wheels.
They look like slotted mags almost.
Yeah,
yeah, they're unique to the Everglades. An aluminum wheel that kind of looks like a steel wheel.
And do those rock sliders come as part of the package?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a black diamond that's been Sasquatched. So it doesn't have the stay bar disconnect. It's the one thing it doesn't have. But it has front locker, rear locker. It has traction control off and the, what other hero buttons? The turn assist.
And if you guys want to take a walk around, once again, all TFL, it'll be up there right now. And you did a good walk around so we can see what is what when it comes to the most, shall we call it, rainworthy, lake-worthy, ocean-worthy Bronco. What should we call it?
I love all of those, yeah.
Yeah, and there is.
One other thing I could talk about, which is, of course, not under an embargo, but yeah. I had the opportunity to – so we were in – Northern Michigan at this spot called Drummond Island. So we started in Mackinac, which sometimes is spelled with a C at the end of it. I don't understand why that is. But we started in Mackinac and then we drove a couple hours to a ferry.
I think it is Upers. I think it is.
It's definitely Upers.
Yeah.
The reason I'm hesitant is I'm not sure if Mackinac is considered the UP.
I don't know. I've never been up there. I'm kind of jealous.
It's beautiful.
Where'd you fly into?
Traverse City, and then we drove up. But an absolutely wonderful part of the country.
And
one
I've
of my
never
favorites.
Seen Lake Huron. So what's Lake Huron like?
Very cold.
Is it? I grew up in Chicago, so I spent a lot of time on Lake Michigan. But
I need to make sure that's the right Great Lake here. Now you got me worried.
Uh-oh. Is it Erie?
No.
Can you name all the Great Lakes?
Erie.
I should have been able to do
Huron,
that. Once upon a time, I was able to do that.
Erie, Huron, Michigan, Superior, Ontario.
Very good. I think that's all five.
I think that's all five.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, Huron. Lake Huron. So I got to drive, actually, on the way out there. Actually, on the way back, a very special Bronco, which I've never driven. It's a four-door Sasquatch Bronco like ours, a Badlands, but it had the little engine and the manual transmission.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was that like?
Freaking awesome.
Is that under embargo?
Don't. No.
Okay, don't.
No, no, no.
Okay.
That's just a normal Bronco.
Okay,
you can go out and buy that.
Ford, we do not want to. Look, let's talk about embargoes just so people understand. So there's, I don't want to confuse people. There are two things that we're talking about. First, I'm talking about like podcasts or videos where they like to tease stuff, so to get you guys watching. It's a narrative technique that is often used because it lets people stay on longer or build your curiosity up so you're kind of interested in watching it. That's not what we're talking about here, right? We're talking about, so we don't do that. We're not trying to tease something and then, you know, not tell you what it is. Our TFL editorial stance is that we're always transparent. Fair?
Right, but if we have an embargo, we have to
Yeah, so the embargoes work in such a way that the manufacturer invites a whole bunch of journalists, and in order for them to be able to publish their stories at the same time, the manufacturer says, hey, you can't publish driving impressions until such and such a time. So I do apologize if I was being a little stringent and salty. I completely understand the embargo, so we do not want to break an embargo. We've never broken an embargo. You know, it's the rules that Ford sets, and we play by their rules because they invited us.
So I have a feeling this Everglades is going to be one of these trims where folks in the comments are going to say, well, it's mostly an appearance package, which is sort of true.
Except for the 3 inches of added
and the winch, depth. And
yeah.
The winch is functional,
but
right?
You can always add that, right?
Yeah, you could do that aftermarket.
And is that winch controlled off one of the auxiliary switches?
No, it's a standard Warren plug.
Okay,
you
yeah.
Plug it in. But what I think this Everglades is going to be, I mean, if you kind of look at what it is, right, us car enthusiasts, especially off-road enthusiasts, are a weird bunch.
Yeah.
We want stuff like factory winches and steel-looking wheels and snorkels.
And sporty station wagons.
Yeah, exactly. Like us car enthusiasts, we want like a very specific breed of vehicle.
Speaking of which, BMW just introduced the M3 Touring in Europe this week, which
great
we're
example.
Not getting.
Yeah. Yep, and then that vehicle is introduced and nobody buys it. Like the kind of the car enthusiast's ultimate dream was
CTSV wagon.
Brown station wagon with a manual transmission and a supercharged V8. They built it. Cadillac did it for you guys at great cost,
and
by the way.
And they're very valuable right now.
Well, but when they were new, they couldn't give them away. They sold 500.
Yeah.
500, which was laughable. I'm worried the Everglades is going to be like that because it's a very kind of niche-specific vehicle.
So buy it now and then hold
30
on
years
to
from
it,
now, yeah. People are going to be like, darn, that Everglades was cool.
I want to say they built 7,500 of the first edition, which is a lot.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to build many of these. I know, because it's 53,000 for the small engine.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get you that much more than like any other Sasquatch Bronco. But the stuff it does get you is very, very cool.
How about towing? How much is the tow? Do you remember?
I think it's...
like 3.5 like the rest of them?
I don't think it's any change towing, yeah. And then, I mean, that's pretty much it. But yeah, it's going to be the Cadillac CTT Wagon. But anyways, I drove a manual Sasquatch Bronco Badlands on the way home.
Yeah, how was that?
Really liked it.
You can't talk about it once again.
No, it's not an Everglades.
Oh, it's a Sasquatch.
It's okay. Just a Badlands, okay. Yeah.
And you liked the manual?
It was really good. Yeah, it's like, it's way more crisp than the manual that you'll find in a Wrangler. I mean, it's really precise.
You've got a manual Wrangler.
Compared to the Wrangler. And I really like that 2.3 in that vehicle. That is a phenomenal engine. Like 300 horsepower, 325 foot-pounds of torque. Plenty of power. Even on the 35s, like I had to overtake a big truck. Third gear, 60 miles an hour, foot to the floor. The thing sounds good. It's responsive. Great manual transmission.
So I did a little bit of a rant. I did the truck podcast this week. I did a little bit of a rant, but let me just not rant this, but let me just kind of talk about what I did find out about the Bronco. So anytime we post a Bronco video, right, people always comment like, that's until the engine blows up, you know? And if you recall, Toyota had that same issue with the Tundra when it first came out. And what ended up happening with the Tundra was all these YouTubers and influencers made videos talking about how horrible it is because the turbos fail. Same thing with the Bronco. The engine fails. And then it turned out, Tommy, that with the Tundra, it was just a very small amount of trucks that had gotten bad turbos during like one day of production, right? So obviously the media and YouTubers blew it up into this huge thing. People were like, oh my God, it's a cab off. Same thing is kind of happening right now with the Bronco with the 2.7 liter. So when I first read the story, the 2.7 liter engines were blowing up, which they are, some of them, right? I was like, that's odd because Ford has been building the 2.7 for like the last 5 years and sticking it into the F-150. So why would all of a sudden, you know, the engine blow up in the Bronco, but it hasn't blown up for 5 years in the F-150. And nobody addressed that in the story, right? They were all like, oh, my God. And there was actually, I was watching a Detroit news story where this woman was like, I don't trust the Bronco anymore. And Ford had replaced her engine. And I was like, just sell it then. It's worth 20K over what you paid for it if you don't trust it. Anyway, finally got a hold of an engineer at Ford.
You did?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Talked to an engineer.
Without a PR person?
Without a PR person, yeah.
When was this?
I don't want to go into it because that would give away my source.
Okay.
So I don't want that. That's, you know, journalists, we protect our sources. As it turns out, it was just a small batch of engines once again created during a small time frame. Mm. So, you know, the story is all Bronco 2.7s blow up, but the reality is it's just a small amount of vehicles created early on in a certain time frame. I think it was like April of last year.
At least according to your source.
At least, well, I think that's also published. That news is out there as well. So,
So what happened, there was a similar story that was told on the Bronco forums.
Yes.
Where someone claimed to work at the Lima engine plant.
Yes.
Where they build the 2.7.
Yeah.
And they claimed, once again, completely unconfirmed, that there was a batch of, like, the manufacturer of the valves had used a material that was inconsistent with standards.
That's what my source said too.
So anyways, we'll have to follow up when Ford actually comes out with an official statement.
Once again, a bit of a tempest in a teapot. Do you understand that reference?
Yes, I understand it. We'll have to see. I mean, and HTSA and Ford are working closely now to see what the scoop is.
I think if we had more of them blowing up, like if it was, you know, an epidemic of engines going at this point, you would have heard by it. But, you know, about it now, and there'd be news stories. But I think, like I say, I think it was a small segment of engines that were put into the Bronco early on.
I like that little engine more than the big engine in the Bronco.
Really?
That little 2.3. That thing's a little hero. It just kind of puts along. It sounded cool in the Badlands I drove. It had good power.
So that's a great transition. Let's transition from the little engine to the big engine.
It's not that big.
No, I'm talking about the 3 liter now.
That's it's 0.7 of a liter bigger. It's not like it's a 6.2.
The 3 liter Bronco Raptor engine.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So that's also a weird decision that Ford made, right? So they went from the 2.4 to the 2.7 out of the 3 liter. All three of them are twin turbos. And with the Raptor, you get, 418 horsepower, if I remember right? And, you know, 0.3 displacement more. I think it's plenty powerful. But I got to tell you, before I tell you what's good about that, now that the driving impressions embargo is over, we can talk about what it drives. But let me tell you what's bad. It's thirsty, dude. That truck is thirsty. 37s are way thirsty. I want to say, I drove to the ranch and back yesterday, and I put in $25 worth of gas, and I think I used most of that up going an hour.
It's like 50 miles,
yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
There and back, you think?
Yeah, probably, right?
It's probably more than that. It's a half hour there. So if you're going 55 miles an
hour. I can tell you how far it is.
Well, that says, can you Google map it?
Yeah, I can tell you how many. I don't think it's very far, Dan. 23 miles from here. So 50 miles.
Yeah.
Less than 50 miles. 46 miles.
Yeah, and I used about $20 worth of gas to go that far.
You really? But the question is, first of all, the Bronco Raptor starts at 70.
Yeah.
The folks buying it are probably not going to be paying 70. Most are going to be paying 90, 100, 110.
Yeah.
If you're paying 110 grand for a Bronco, do you think you really care too much about gas prices?
I don't know.
I really don't think so.
We say that a lot. That becomes like an automotive cliche. But I know a lot of people who borrow that money or who stretch for that, be it wisely or unwisely, who probably do care, you know, who probably you know, thought to themselves, this is my one chance to own the top dog Bronco Raptor, so I'm going to go stretch for it. I'm going to borrow money, or I'm going to sell my wife's inheritance or whatever it is. And so, yeah, I think a certain percentage of people do care. And I think also, once again, there's this myth out there that just because you're rich, you don't care about money, right? And I think that's not how the brain works. I think what ends up happening is the reason people, you know, it's like the Ebenezer Scrooge. You know Ebenezer Scrooge, right, from the Christmas Carol?
Sure.
This guy was super rich, but he was the worst and most miserly of people. There are people like that who really do care about how much money they spend. So, yeah, I think people care.
I don't know. I've talked to a few Lamborghini owners in my life, and not one of them brought up gas mileage as a negative in owning a car.
But have you talked to them recently? Where gas prices are now at $5,
well, they were in California, so it was still $5, $6, $7 there.
I just don't buy that. Hey, if I can afford it, I don't care about the gas. How about if you afford it, you care about the carbon you're putting out there? How about that?
Sure.
Because that's the other half of that equation, right? Right. You're putting out as much carbon as your next five cars combined.
I would make the pitch that if you care about carbon, you're probably not buying a purpose-built off-roader on
37s. I care about carbon, and I would love that truck.
I don't know if the average consumer would agree with you.
Why? Because I love it. The two are totally consistent in my head. I want the coolest, baddest-ass car, and at the same time, I care about, you know, what we're doing to this planet.
I actually talked to some of the Ford folks about that on the Bronco launch.
Yeah.
And they said from the research they've done, Raptor folks that are looking to buy a Raptor, because they were questioning why there was all this like questions about online about a Bronco hybrid, and they're like the Raptor audience is for the most part inconsistent with the hybrid audience. Those are two very different groups of folks.
I don't buy any of that. I absolutely do not buy
that.
Well,
I think market research might disagree with you there.
I think that's Ford's either PR or market research spin. You know, it's the same mentality that kept Volkswagen from importing the Amarok, which they should have done like 5 years ago, which would have gone and sold gangbusters. And it was Ford that finally broke that small truck compact.
You think a Bronco Raptor hybrid would be successful?
Yeah.
Raptor hybrid?
I think an electric Bronco would be huge.
Well, an electric Bronco I agree with, but that's not a Raptor. Well, I'm specifically asking about the Raptor.
Yes, of course, because the Jeep 4x4 is the hardest one to get right now. The Wrangler, because you get a $7,500 tax credit.
The 4xe?
Yeah, the 4xe, sorry, the 4xe. You get a $7,500 tax credit, and so people are buying them like hotcakes because it's the cheapest Rubicon you can get.
Way more affordable, though. We're talking about that's an affordability play, where there's nothing affordable about $100,000 Raptor.
I'm not sure it's that affordable. I bet you a 4xe...
It's probably 55.
No, I think it's 65. I think that the dealers are ordering them, and Jeep is building them at the highest possible.
Yeah, sure.
So you got every option, including like the fur on top of the Freedom panels, you know, even stuff that most people probably don't give a rat's ass about. So you mark up the price as high as possible because the dealer knows that they're going to get a $7,500 rebate.
I am all about a Bronco hybrid. I think that's a fantastic idea, but I think a Raptor is the wrong place for that powertrain.
Well, if you're curious about what that is like in a drag race, we did it. And that video is now up and live on TFL Car or alltfl.com, where we drag race the Bronco Raptor against the Jeep 492 and against our Sasquatch.
392.
Now, 392. I keep saying 4. 392. And once again, I don't know the results. I didn't watch the video, so I'm not trying to tease anything, but I haven't watched the video, so I don't know which one won. I'm guessing it was a Jeep, but go watch the video because I don't know.
So Andre said that the yellow Bronco beat the Raptor by like a car length and a half in the quarter, and then the 392 walked away from the Raptor.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of makes sense. Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting discussion. Like, so the other point to that is, how much of an impact would a standard hybrid system have in a Bronco? Right? Because if you look at the F-150 hybrid, you do get a fuel economy bump, but it's not a huge fuel economy bump. And that's another vehicle where, once again, the hybrid system is not available on the Raptor. Another example of this is the Tundra TRD Pro. That thing is not really all that efficient, and that's a hybrid.
So I kind of feel like, unfortunately, that boat has sailed, right? We have now gone way past the hybrid stage of off-roaders. At one point, and I think Jeep probably hit it at the right time, so sometimes timing is important. At one point, timing would have been right. You're trying to get public and, you know, most buyers to go from internal combustion to electrification, and the way you can do that is to wean them off gas by doing a hybrid, kind of the best of both worlds. Of course, the downside is you've got two powertrains. You know, it creates problems. BMW tried it with the i8, didn't exactly work. Jeep is making it work in the 4xe. But the bigger problem, at least from a perception point of view, is the Rivian and the Hummer EV, right? You're already, if you look at it as a progression, right, you're going from one to the other with the ultimate goal being complete electrification, you're already giving consumers the option to buy the fully electric ones. And I personally feel like, why would I want to buy yesterday's tech when I can buy tomorrow's tech?
Because you can't bring a jerry can on the trail.
Yeah,
it's a big problem. I mean, the charging infrastructure in a lot of places is nowhere near the trails.
I get that, Tommy. But let's face it. Let's look at the most use case scenarios. So, first of all, 99% of people who buy these things, and that includes the Hummer, unfortunately, will never take an off-road. So who cares? So now you're talking to 1% of the people. 1%. But, like trail recon dude, right? 1%. Let me finish, and then I'll let you talk as long as you want. 1%. All right, let's say 2%. Then if you go to Moab and you run most trails, right, they're not that long. Let's say you're going to go run fins and things. You can charge it up and then go run fins and things all day and come back. You're not going to run out of juice. If you're doing overlanding, yeah, it becomes an issue. So I don't think it's such an issue. But go ahead. I kind of spoke over you. I'd love to hear your opinion.
Well, what is the reason the G-Wagon has three lockers?
It goes back probably to when it was first specced by the Iraqi military. And they wanted three lockers because that's where it comes from.
So that's
right?
True. But why does the current one, which was fully redesigned, that has no relation to any Middle East army, have three lockers?
What's your thinking?
Here's my point. The reason that the G-Wagon has three lockers is because the ultimate perception of off-road ability. The reason the G-Wagon is as successful as it is because it's a status statement. It's, I have the ultimate vehicle which can conquer anything, go over anything.
Yeah, I agree.
It will never touch dirt.
I agree.
In a million years, it'll never touch
dirt. Same thing with the Hummer. Yeah.
But the issue is that perception does not align with a limited range vehicle that cannot be recharged.
Sure it does. If you're never taking it off.
But yeah, but here's the thing. It's about the perception. The perception is I can't take it off-road. I can't take it off-road because there's no charging infrastructure near the trail.
So what you're telling me, let me just make this argument, I think, the way you're saying it. So what you're saying is people who buy the G-Wagon like the three lockers because it allows them to have the ultimate off-roader, right?
And the boxy look. They don't know what they do, right. But the salesman told them these three buttons make it better than any other car off-road.
And what you're saying is that people won't buy a Rivian or a Hummer EV because they feel that the perception is that if they take it off-road, they have limited range. So it's not as ultimately off-road capable. That's the equation you're making.
That is the equation I think, in front of the audience.
Okay, I think that is absolutely not the way that people think about this. And I can prove it, because Rivian is sold out and the Hummer is sold out. I think the people who buy it based on the fact that it's the ultimate off-roader care about range on-road but wouldn't give a rat's ass about range off-road. And you see what I'm saying?
I think the reason
that's like me saying,
first of all, the reason that they're sold out is because it's a new hot thing, right? I don't. It's the first of all, every car is sold out. You can't buy a Kia Rio, let alone the hottest electric truck in the market. They're hot vehicles.
You're right about that, but used or slightly used Hummer EVs are now selling for $250,000. There's a lot of EVs that are and a lot of cars that are unobtainium.
But they're not the newest, hottest cars.
Yeah, there are. Broncos are selling, let's say, for 80,000. Let's say 10, maybe 15 over sticker, and that's quickly going down.
But there's more of them.
Rivians are selling on Bring a Trailer, as far as I can tell, you know, 10, 20 over sticker. They're not doubling their
Supply
price.
Supply and demand, Dad.
They're not doubling their
if
price.
If there were 150 Rivians, like there are 150
there
Hummers.
Were, for a long time, there were 150 Rivians, and they still weren't double the price.
I think that they are more expensive. I think that the Hummer's kind of an anomaly. I think people know, there's a perception that people know the Hummer is so limited because they're not building any.
Do me a favor.
I know the prices.
Go
I've
to Bring
seen
a Trailer.
The prices.
Yeah.
110, 130. You're also talking about a Rivian, which launched with the advertised price of 80 versus a Hummer, which launched with the advertised of 130. That's a pretty big gap in itself.
Yeah, but I said it's not doubling the price, Tommy.
And you can also talk about, if you want to talk about other cars, which really aren't that hot, which are doubling the price, vehicles like that AMG Mercedes that you had at that local Mercedes dealer that sold for double the price. Remember you went to Mercedes Westminster?
Right, but oh, gosh, hold on a second. Once again, whoa, back up your horses. Either, you know, you're just trying to make your point or you're unaware that Mercedes has announced that those are very limited production numbers.
Just like the Hummer.
GM.
Absolutely.
No, absolutely not. GM has not announced that.
First editions, you bet. First editions are
Tommy,
very
come on.
Limited.
Now you're just being obstinate. Look.
I want to have a realistic discussion and you're shutting down my argument.
No, I'm not. That's not a realistic
discussion.
You can't
say no 8 times in a row and expect me to like.
Hold on. Let me just.
It's a realistic discussion.
No, it's not. Let me lay this out. Hummer is going to build as many Hummers as possible, whereas Mercedes is going to build, let's say, 300 GTs, right? Sure, there'll be a limited amount of first editions, but after the first edition, there'll be second editions and third editions and, you know, space editions. And, you know, there's no amount of Hummer EVs that are going to get limited in terms of the vehicle itself.
It was
sure,
like that Mercedes.
No,
that
no,
Mercedes
no.
launched, it was the AMG GT and then the AMG GTC and then the AMG.
Absolutely not
Dad,
true.
Please stop saying no 1,000 times in a row. It's really hard.
But
to
it's not true. You're just,
it
just
is
now
true.
You're just making stuff up.
It was Mercedes AMG GT, AMG GTC, AMG GTR. They just keep coming out with more and more versions of
it. No, there's only the ones that are being doubled in price are the black editions, and that's a set amount of vehicles.
Oh, sure. But there's a my point
is... Oh, you're right, but that's okay. It's
my
sure.
point is that the reason that the Hummer's so hot, Dad, is because it's a very limited supply. Will you admit that GM's not building a lot of them and they're really struggling to get them out the door? Like really struggling?
Yeah, but they haven't announced. And Mercedes is struggling to get the GT Black Editions out the door too. So what?
But it's also a much less in-demand vehicle. That Hummer for some reason is just like people are really, really into that thing. But it's not because of the off-road ability, I don't think. It's just because of its – look, a Hummer attracts, I hate to say it, a certain crowd of folks. I'll say it.
Warning, Will Rogers.
Why did the Hummer H2 fail?
You're going down a very dangerous path there.
You said it yourself off camera. You just don't have the cojones to say it on camera.
The Hummer H2
attracts a very...
The one thing I always hated about old Top Gear was they made these stereotypes
but
that I think are funny, but not necessarily
you
true.
You had that conversation with GM that the reason the Hummer brand failed is they lost control of the brand.
Yes.
And that has to do with the types of folks that are buying the Hummer.
That's much different.
That's how the
Hummers
are being
used.
Like
Top Gear would say that, you know, the Audi TT was all bought by hairdressers, right? That's the road that I do not want to go on because there are a lot of non-hairdressers
sure.
that bought that thing. And I know Top Gear did it because it was funny, but it was not true.
When's the last time you saw a Hummer H2 on the trail?
Mm-hmm. Well, when's the last time I even saw one on the road?
Might
be a better question.
All the time. I haven't seen one in Colorado.
I haven't seen one on the road recently.
They're everywhere. H2s. Open your eyes. I mean, they kind of blend in now because they're old, but they're pretty out there.
When I see one, I usually pay attention to it. Remember when we were at like Best Buy and the guy had the Alpha truck? That was pretty cool. Remember that?
I have no idea.
The Alpha truck?
Oh, but that was an H3. I'm talking an H2.
Yeah, that was H2. Cool. But I'm saying when I see one, I kind of like perk up because they're so certainly so rare.
I bet we'll see a one tonight going home.
I bet you won't. They're becoming rare.
They're
you know what isn't rare, what I see all the time? If you want to have that conversation, the FJ. FJs are just everywhere in Colorado.
Right.
But Hummers, not so much, at least in my opinion.
I kind of disagree on that one. I don't want to offend anybody. My goal is not to offend anyone. But I'm saying, and you said it yourself, the Hummer lost control of the brand. That vehicle became the poster child of Beverly Hills and chrome spinners.
Actually, worse than that, it became the poster child for conspicuous consumption.
Exactly. And those kind of folks that are drawn to that, I think, are more willing to spend $300,000 on a vehicle, which in a few years is not going to be worth it.
So the stereotype you're painting is that, like, the Kardashians bought those things because and rappers bought them because they were like loud. And then, yeah, and that's what I mean when they lost control of them, right? They went into music videos and they became kind of this poster child for the rap world, right? But there were a lot of people, a lot of families who bought them because they were cooler than a Suburban and they needed a rig that could tow but look cool, right?
Some folks did.
There were a lot of people like that too.
But very few people were buying them for off-roaders.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's a shame. I mean, the H2 actually is a phenomenal off-roader. We had one, and it was lovely.
That's every off-roader, not just the Hummer. That's your Everglades right there.
Sure, but that one in specific really had a following of folks that were epitomizing conspicuous consumption, right? I just had an interesting conversation with Ford about this, and some high ups at Ford. I said, you know what would really sell is the Excursion. They brought back an Excursion right now, it would really, really sell. It would be extremely popular. People are paying more than new for 20-year-old Excursions.
Having said that, we couldn't sell ours on bids.
Well, we
tried to get AK for it, which is what we paid for it, and it didn't.
Maybe we overpaid. Maybe that was the issue on ours.
Maybe when we bought it, gas wasn't $6 a gallon.
Right, and that certainly is factors in the equation. But they said, you know, you're right, but the fact of the matter is it's hard to express how much flack we took as a company with that thing back in 2004 when they made the decision to kill it. It was a vehicle that had this aura around it that was completely undesirable.
Yeah, so make it electric.
In modern day culture. Yeah, you could make it electric. But this is my biggest problem with the Hummer. I really don't like this attitude. Let's take a vehicle that is very, very over the top, very, very inefficient, uses a huge amount of batteries that really cost the earth a lot to mine, and call it okay because it's electric. 200 kilowatt hours in a Hummer? No vehicle should have 200 kilowatt hours in a range of 300 miles. That's ridiculous. In my opinion, that's kind of lazy engineering. You know, their solution to get range was just throw batteries at it.
Well, maybe what they did, and I don't want to speak out for GM engineers, but it just did come back from the Lyric.
Yeah.
And so they were telling me about the Ultium battery packs. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, once again, the engineer was tasked with creating the ultimate off-roader. And to do that, you needed a lot of things. Like, you need to roll on big tires. You needed to be tall. You needed to have air suspension. All that stuff just adds a ton of weight. And so to power all that stuff, given the current battery tech, which we don't have solid-state batteries yet, they went with a big battery pack.
But there's other ways to do it. I mean,
and the other thing you said, which is true and not true, okay? So this is a conversation. These are the comments we always see when we have electric vehicles, right? It's like electric cars are not better for the environment because you got to mine the lithium. Yes, you do have to mine the lithium, but there have been very persuasive studies out there that show over the course of an electric vehicle's life, it will use less carbon, it will use less energy, it will use less resources than the equivalent internal combustion engine. And that number is coming down, right? It used to be that you had to keep the thing on the road for this many years, but now it's coming down to fewer years as the processes get easier. And it's not fair, I think, to ultimately like compare a Gen 1.0 electric car to like a Gen 25
right.
internal combustion engine. The cars will get better. The batteries will get better. Mining will change.
We're not on EV1 stage, though.
Yeah, we are.
That vehicle didn't need to be 1,000 feet long and 18 feet wide and 20 feet tall. You can have big tires in an off-road capable vehicle in a lighter weight package.
This is what makes...
I mean, here's what freaks the hell out of me about that thing. That thing's a 0-60 in 3.5 seconds. I drive around Boulder in my Volkswagen that weighs 1,300 pounds, right? And it's alarming to think that someone with no skill, no ability to drive a vehicle that quickly can go, they'll ultimately text, and go ripping around our streets with 9,000 pounds of Hummer.
Well, I mean, tell me, we can have that discussion. If you want to have that discussion... And there was recently, and we've got numbers behind this now. So NHTSA asked the manufacturers to start providing data on all their self-driving crashes.
Yeah.
Right? And right now we only got like 1 month's worth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out there was something, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but you can look it up. I'm pretty close. There were something like 300 crashes that were reported for self-driving. What company do you think had by far the lion's share of those?
Tesla.
Exactly.
That's so not many though, 300?
No, 1 month of reporting so far.
Oh, okay.
There's not enough data yet. It's like they just started reporting it, right?
Yeah.
So by far, I mean, Tesla accounted for like 90% of all the accidents.
Right.
You know, followed by Honda, which is weird. But anyway. Because yeah, Honda self-driving, it's the way they report it. You got to cut the numbers. Anyway, the interesting part there is if you're really worried about road safety, then maybe where you start cracking down is not on people. Because let's face it, heavy-duty trucks have been out there and are out there. So the Hummer is heavy, but so is a Ram 3500 or a Super Duty 40, you know, F450, right? These are all very heavy trucks. So this is nothing new.
But they won't do 0 to 60 in 3 seconds.
Agreed. And I'm with you on that. I think the Plaid is actually worse.
I agree. 1.9.
What maybe is a more pressing, if you're going to go and talk about safety, is that you're allowing basically Tesla to perform beta on our roads, right? That's putting lives at danger, because that software, and I think Germany's much farther ahead of us than we are, that software is not ready for prime time, and you should not be allowing cars to be driving themselves without, you know, stringent testing from both the manufacturer and the government.
I completely agree.
Before you let, you know, people loose by taking some kind of goofy test, right, that you have to take a self-monitored test that the Tesla does for you. And if you score the right numbers, then you can enable, you know, the latest version of full self-driving. That is just bad, you know what, crazy.
But I also think that there's a difference between autonomous technologies and a technology that actually really helps save lives. And there's a lot of confusion. You know, an autonomous feature where you're on the highway and all of a sudden you feel safe to text and, you know, and all stuff while you're driving, I think that's dangerous.
This is also confounding, but, right? You bring up a good point.
I'd like to say that I think stuff like automatic emergency braking has saved thousands of lives.
Well, this is what's so confounding. So for the first time, and this could be due to COVID, everything's kind of gotten wacky with COVID, right? The American number of American deaths has increased on highways. So we were going down, 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 all of a sudden this year, we went back up to over 30,000, and now you've got all the safety tech on many of the new cars, like you said, autonomous braking, right? Why isn't that decreasing the deaths instead of increasing?
Was it a 2020 year? I mean, part of the reason 2020 may have been up is if you looked
It was like 2021.
Road speeds the latest year. Blew up in 2020. People were driving like bat out of hell in 2020 because there was less traffic. It's all an interesting question. I mean, and then the other argument is like, well, then people become too reliant on stuff like automatic emergency braking and they don't pay enough attention.
Personally, I've gotten to drive the Hummer EV. I love it. I fell in love with it. We had a TRX for the same reason. I love vehicles that push. One way you can say it is I love vehicles that make no sense. Another way to say it is I love vehicles that push the technology. And for me.
But they're not pushing the technology. They're putting 200 kilowatt hours of battery and giving it a big motor.
Of course, that's one thing. But they are pushing the technology when it comes to crab walk. Right? No, nobody else has done that.
Four-wheel steering has been around since Super Hikus. Your car.
No, not doing a crab
walk. Why do you need a crab walk? What is it used for, a crab walk?
Tommy, don't conflate. Whether you need it or like it doesn't mean it's not an advancement. It is an advancement. Sure, it's probably, you know.
It's a backwards advancement. Like, it'll help people run into mailboxes, crab walking down
there. You have this engineering problem. You have this giant vehicle. And whether you agree with it or not is beside the point, but you have it. So how do you get it to turn in such a way that it's drivable or better yet parkable, and then you create an interesting and innovative solution, which is you give it four-wheel steering. I think that's smart. I like that.
Yeah, it was great, and yeah, it is smart. Yeah. But it's not new. I mean, 300ZX had four-wheel steering in the 90s.
No, it had like 1 degree of steering either way, either in phase or out of phase.
It's quadra steer. Quadra steer had like the same amount of steering in the early 2000s.
It didn't work for the most part.
It worked great. It was Delphi quadra steer. People, if you ever talk to someone that has quadra steer, they still swear by it 25 years later.
Anyway, I just love the amount of tech GM threw it. It's like the Corvette. GM like picks certain vehicles and they throw a lot of their best engineering at it. So I applaud them. And, you know, we live in America. I'm going to say that. Nobody's forcing you to buy it. The market, hopefully, unlike other countries, will determine if it's successful or not. But right now, the market is screaming loud and clear.
Look,
GM got it right.
I would be amazed if a manufacturer came out with a small, lightweight electric vehicle that had 31 to 32-inch tall tires with locking differentials with a 50-kilowatt-hour battery.
I think it's coming.
That will go 250 miles and cost $45,000.
So, you know, there's a rumor that Toyota's going to be bringing back the FJ.
Yeah.
Which could be that.
Yeah. It could be that. Yeah. But I'm just not that impressed by a maker that slaps $130,000 on a price tag, 200 kilowatt hours, and 9,000 pounds.
Tommy, I think it's also a bargain of the century because, as you know, our
$130,000?
Yeah. So let's just do a straight up comparison, right? If you wanted to get a Tesla Powerwall, you know how many kilowatt hours it is, right? It's 10 kilowatt hours. How much does that cost? How much is the Tesla Powerwall?
$10,000.
$10,000. So basically, if you use that to equate how much battery cost, you to get 200 kilowatt hours of battery Tesla Powerwalls, you would have to pay $200,000. Yet in the Hummer EV, you're getting that for $112,000.
Do they do vehicle to load like Ford does?
No, but
then it's no use to me. That's a useless equation then, because in the Ford I can use those 130
kilowatts.
Then use
a Ford.
So that's Ford is a good value. I think Ford is
You get 131 kilowatt hours, right?
Yes, Ford absolutely knocked out of the park. They really killed it with the Lightning. I really think they did it right. General Motors, though, I don't really see the appeal of the Hummer.
And how do you know that the vehicle to load isn't coming? All you need is an inverter, and that inverter could be in the truck, or that inverter could be in the charger, right? It could go both ways. You don't have to put it in the truck. You could put it in the charger.
I think you have to have some technology in the truck. I don't think it's quite that simple.
Because, maybe you're right. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you do have to have some hardware.
Is it software enabled, or is it?
I think it might be hardware. Because if you look at the Ford, which is interesting, I just took a look at our. We just got our in our.
I mean, it is a battery.
Right, but we just got in our
and
new.
And electricity is electricity.
We just got in our new Ford Charge Pro box, right, which does the V2L. And it's not like you think it would work. It actually doesn't plug into the beds and the outlet. And it doesn't use a J7072 plug. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
No, it uses a CCS port, like a fast charger. So basically, it looks like a fast charger plug that you plug into both ports on the F-150, and that's how it gets power back out.
Look, I'm not an engineer, and I should ask.
Yeah, I don't either.
But to me, when I said a battery is a battery, right? I mean, you've got this thing that holds power like a regular battery. It's no different than like a Duracell at the end of the day.
Right, but the manufacturer has to go the extra step to add the integration to access that energy. You can't just say, oh, it's in the truck.
So I don't know. I'm just saying that plug maybe only works one way. Maybe it doesn't work the other way. But I could see electricity flowing both ways, and I could see maybe a software solution. I don't know.
You know what else is confounding? This is just like, what are they doing? So you've got vehicles in an 800-volt architecture.
Yes.
Like the Taycan, right?
And the Hummer EV.
Nope. Taycan EV6.
Yeah, the Hummer EV.
The Hummer EV only charges at 800 volts.
Yeah, I know. It's only
and then it drives at 400.
I know.
Why?
Because they wanted fast charging and they didn't feel they needed it, or they didn't want the.
I don't understand that.
The accountant said, you know, this is going to get just a little. Maybe to add that, right? Porsche has a lot more. Flexibility in their pricing, right? And that's proven by the fact that a Taycan Turbo S costs well over $200,000. Whereas GMC maybe felt that, like, if we added that, it would add a couple thousand to the price.
You know,
and maybe that's a couple thousand too more.
Who has absolutely no flexibility in pricing?
Who?
Hyundai Kia.
Yeah.
They are known for having no flexibility, and they're doing it at 40,000.
I don't know. You know, the decision there could be that they're taking a loss on every one of those they sell. That's also a possibility. I think right now with electric vehicles, that actually may be the reality. It certainly feels like the reality. You know, the latest news out of Tesla was that two bits of news this week. Tesla, Musk said that the factories are burning money and that basically he's trying to keep the company out of bankruptcy. Now, whether that's a way for him to motivate his employees and his executives, I don't know. Or maybe that's a way for him to generate news for the sake of generating news, because he's, you know, likes to do that.
I mean, there must be. I
don't know.
I heard an interesting thing about Carlos Ghosn, who was not a good guy, but
he was former CEO
of Nissan. And there's got to be a way to make money, because his deal with the Nissan Leaf, which started at $30,000+, is he said from day one, every Leaf has to make money. And of course, the Leaf wasn't amazing, but it is proof that you can make money on EVs.
Yeah.
And if there was one person that wouldn't burn an extra penny if he didn't have to.
Yeah, I agree.
It was Carlos Ghosn.
So let's get back to the Bronco Raptor. Outside of the fact that it's thirsty, I was absolutely blown away by it. I got to take it up Deer Creek in Keystone, and it just ate it up. I didn't air the tires down because I didn't have, honestly, a way to air them back up or time, but it was mind-blowingly really capable off-road.
Yeah, they killed it.
Yeah, they killed it.
Yeah, they did a really good job with it.
It's just it's a little too wide. It's as wide as a Raptor.
So I had a few conversations, and folks were saying, yeah, but, I mean, the mirror width probably isn't that different, and that's true, but the body width really is different. So we were going through some trails in the Everglades up in Michigan, and they were so narrow that you couldn't squeeze the fender width of a Bronco through some of those trails. They were that narrow.
Bronco Raptor. Yeah,
because
those people hate those.
The flares.
Yeah, they stick out.
So even though the mirrors may not be different, but the bodywork is that much wider, and the track width is only 9 inches wider, 8.6 inches.
So you know what I've been thinking about recently? What's better? Which would you rather have? Let me ask you this. I'd like to get your opinion. F-150 Raptor or Bronco Raptor? Because they're very similar now in terms of pricing.
I'd take the Bronco.
Would you? Really? Why?
I just like...
Is it different? Is it new? Or is it just you like the fact that you have a...
I just don't... In my life, I don't have a need
for a truck,
really. Yeah. Right? And I like being able to take the roof off and the doors off.
All right. How about Bronco Raptor versus Raptor R? If and when that comes.
A Bronco Raptor.
Okay, still.
I can still... if I could take a roof off an F-150, I'd be like, oh, yeah, let's do that. But,
okay.
I mean, well, the other question, too, and this very well could happen, there could be a Bronco Raptor R.
Yeah.
There's nothing stopping them, you know.
Or an EV Raptor.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, it's...
Bronco or F-150.
I mean, the only reason... This is a tricky thing. The only reason that the Raptor R exists, right? The only reason is because of the TRX. That thing wouldn't exist if it wasn't
possible,
for the TRX.
Yeah. How about a Ranger Raptor? Well, that exists already. It just doesn't exist in America.
Well, we've been getting a lot of spy shots about them, so it's got to be coming to the States soon. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I would still take the Bronco, but it's going to be more expensive than a Ranger Raptor.
Well, guys, thank you for joining us. We had a lively conversation.
Very lively.
As always. People say they hate our arguing, and yet it's father and son. It's kind of part of the deal, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, as always, we'll see you on another episode of TFL Talk.
Yeah, let's get some lunch.
All right.
All right, see you guys next time. Remember, alltfl.com. Ciao.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.